Crosby, and you're listening to the Mean Joe Grizzly Podcast.
Hey, it's Tom Matthews from Return of the Living Dead and Friday the 13th, Part 6, to name a few, and you're listening to the Mean Joe Grizzly Podcast. Enjoy.
Let me introduce myself. I'm Joe Grizzly, bitch.
What up, Mean Militia? It's Mean Joe Grizzly, and when I'm not mentally evaluating Satan, grabbing DoorDash for Count Dracula, exercising one of the Lords of Hell, or trying to escape a dead-eyed infested apartment building, I'm at the Grizzly Cave, watching movies, reading comics, listening to metal, and of course, crushing beers. And on today's episode, I'll be giving reviews on not one, not two, not three, but four movies. April was a heavy month for horror, with the releases of Nefarious, Renfield, The Pope's Exorcist, and the highly anticipated Evil Dead Rise. But before we get started, I want y'all to take a second and follow the show on all social media platforms, as well as joining my Mean Militia on the show's official Facebook group by clicking the links down in the episode description. Also, don't forget to subscribe to the show on whatever platform y'all listen on. By doing this, y'all support the show and help me continue to talk to y'all about all forms of badassery. So, which movies stand out? Which movies are letdowns? And which ones are surprises? Let's get into it by kicking off this horror fatal four-way with Nefarious. This is Grizzly Grade Reviews. So Nefarious tells the story of a serial killer on death row that has to be mentally evaluated and deemed fit for execution by a psychiatrist. But when the evaluation begins, the killer claims that he is a demon and that he is the one who committed his murders, not the actual inmate. And then a philosophical battle of wits and faith begins. So I knew next to nothing about this movie other than the trailer I watched. And it was showing one night at my local theater, and I decided to check it out. And I would be lying if I said that I wasn't engaged and actually kind of on the edge of my seat a little bit watching this movie until the very end. And I felt like I was scammed. And the more I think about it, the more I see this movie for what it is. It's a pure propaganda film. Throughout the film, Sean Patrick Flannery as the inmate is completely believable as an actual possessed individual in the realest way possible. He's not projectile vomiting everywhere, spinning his head all the way around, levitating out of his chair, or any of the classic tropes for possession and exorcism movies. Apart from having the knowledge of events that have happened before, that it would not have been impossible for him to know or have a knowledge of the future or making, you know, light bulbs explode, little things like that. And he gives the performance that truly makes you think he is possessed. Very, very good performance. The philosophical back and forth between him and the psychiatrist is pretty good at times, but all of it, in hindsight, is really, really preachy. And to make all of that be clear, I have to dive into spoilers. So if you don't want spoilers, just skip ahead a little bit. All right. Spoilers ahead from Nefarious from here on out. So you've been warned. All right. So I've made the comment that this is a propaganda movie, and this is true, and it is solidified when Glenn Beck shows up at the end as himself on his show. I was like, what in the hell is Glenn Beck doing on this movie? And then everything fell into place. And it completely ruined the film for me after that realization. Stuff like abortion, suicide, murder are all philosophical debates that are often come up in movies dealing with demonic possession, because it goes back to the concept of sin and good and evil. So going into this blind and not knowing who directed or produced this film, these topics didn't tip me off to this being a film with a political agenda. So in hindsight, after the reveal of Glenn Beck and seeing that the director of the film was a director of the God Is Not Dead movies, I knew that this movie was pure pro-life political propaganda. Now, let me be clear. I only discuss politics on this show when it is relevant to whatever we are covering. With that being said, I don't care what message from whatever side it's coming from. I don't like any viewpoint shoved on me or forced on me. Movies like this, and a perfect example of the other side of the aisle's argument, like the Black Christmas remake that recently came out a few years ago, are perfect examples of viewpoints being force-fed to the audience. And honestly, if I had known the background of this film before I went and seen it, I would have never went and seen it. So yeah, Nefarious was fairly solid with an absolutely fantastic performance by Sean Patrick Flannery, but unfortunately it gets bogged down with its preachy message and heavy agenda, taking it from a decent supernatural thriller to a pure propaganda film. So it gets a 2.7 out of 5, and it is not Grizzly grade guaranteed. Now, let's move on to Renfield. Renfield is the story of Dracula's faithful servant of the same name trying to break away from his toxic relationship with the Prince of Darkness and trying to move on to have a life for himself. And of course, it doesn't go the way he wants it to go. So this was on my most anticipated movies of 2023 list, and it was good, but it's not great. So to start off, Nicholas Hoult as Renfield was great. He's good every time he's on the screen in every type of scene, whether he's talking about his toxic relationship with Dracula with a therapy group, his desires to be free and live on his own, or when he's tearing bad guys to pieces and massacring whole groups of henchmen. He is relatable and very heartfelt character. You feel for him in his situation, because he truly is the victim, even though he's doing all of these heinous things. Nicolas Cage as Dracula is something that I was definitely intrigued by, but after seeing it on screen, it was so much better than I thought it would be. He was phenomenal. He took a lot of the portrayal of Dracula from Bela Lugosi's era, but of course, he spices it up with his over-the-top craziness that we all know and love him for. He chews up the scenery and spits it out in every single scene. And he's definitely one of my favorite portrayals of Dracula, and one of Cage's best performances, probably since Face Off, in my opinion, honestly. Not only did Cage channel that classic Universal Dracula, the directors and stuff also used like old footage from the 1930s Dracula and overlaid Cage and Hoult over Lugosi and Dwight Fry. And it's freaking awesome. I love how it just flawlessly seems like it's new footage, but it's not. It's the old footage. At least I haven't found any evidence that it's brand new footage. Another really, really cool touch was having William Ragsdale, who played Charlie Brewster from Fright Night, to play the exploding priest that you see in the trailer. Yeah, that's William Ragsdale. That's Charlie Brewster. It's really cool to see him get that cameo. The gore in this movie, even though it's almost completely CGI, it's so over the top that it actually fits great that it is CGI. And that's something that I don't really say often. I follow this YouTuber in the horror community named Cody Leach, and he said the same thing, and I couldn't agree more. The over the top gore was almost like perfect that it was CGI instead of it being practical. All that stuff when I talk about over the top gore, like, it is gory. It's ridiculous. There's tearing arms off, throwing said arms, and pinning people to the wall, killing people with their own legs, and stuff like that. So, again, I don't say it often, and not many horror fans do, but the CGI gore fit. It just did. And all of this stuff was great, and it was enough for me to really enjoy this movie. But where it really lacks is the story and the structure of the story and Awkwafina. The story overall feels disconnected at times. There's a story, the story of Renfield and him trying to break away from Dracula and pursue his own life and interests, which is what we are here for. And then there's the other subplot about Awkwafina's cop character and the mob and corrupt cops and her trying to avenge her father. And it just didn't fit or really drove the story. It didn't really drive the story forward. It kind of felt like it was all created just to give Awkwafina a role in the movie. And also, Awkwafina was just... she was just Awkwafina. She doesn't bring anything to the table. And honestly, she's just awkward the entire movie. Like, her parts in the movie seem so forced. And she's not an actor. She's a rapper. And that's fine. She's not meant to be a good actor. But I do feel like that she's just going in there being herself. And I don't see her being the grizzled cop that's out for revenge for her father. It just didn't work. It kind of felt like back in the day when they would just put Beyonce in movies or some pop star, like when they would put LL Cool J in the movies, and it just didn't work. But those were really my gripes. But Renfield, it does perfectly balance horror and comedy by combining all that over-the-top gore with gut-busting laughs. It also manages to maintain the classic lore of Dracula while somehow bringing a fresh take through, and I think it's through the phenomenal performances of Holt and Cage. They're fantastic. And it's not perfect, but it's definitely solid in almost every category. So Renfield gets a 3.75 out of 5, and it's Grizzly Grade guarantee. Now, let's move on to The Pope's Exorcist. Set in the late 1980s, The Pope's Exorcist tells the story of Gabriel Amarth, the Pope's personal exorcist, who as of late had come under scrutiny regarding the need for his position and whether or not good or evil exists. And this theory is put to the test when he is sent to Spain to investigate an alleged possession and forces Amarth to pull out all the stops and faith to combat an evil he has never faced before. Guys, I honestly didn't give a shit about this movie when it was announced. Not even Russell Crowe could pique my interest. In fact, possession and exorcism films have been done to death at this point, with almost nothing new ever being brought to the table, with exceptions like Evil Dead and that franchise. And I personally like the Conjuring universe. I think that they are doing some things different that are interesting, but the majority of possession and exorcism movies are just the same damn movie repackaged. All of them are trying to emulate the original Exorcist for the most part. And they're usually riddled with some tropes and the same ones over and over again. Cliche dialogue and an overabundance of jump scares. And I'm just super burned out on that. A lot of people get burned out on slashers, but I feel like slashers as of late have started to reinvent themselves a little bit with movies like X and Pearl and stuff like that. But Exorcism movies kind of have stayed the same. So I'm looking for something fresh with that before I could say, yeah, I love Possession and Exorcism films. But I have to say that The Pope's Exorcist was surprisingly good. Now, it's not reinventing the genre or really doing much different from what most have done, but there are a few things that I thought were great. Starting out, the obvious is Russell Crowe as Gabriel Amarth, the Pope's Exorcist. He was great. Russell Crowe has a great time in this role, and he's not playing it too serious, but not like phoning it in. And I really think that he liked the character and the script and just wanted to have fun with it. And it really shows. He's not really chewing the scenery, but he's having a damn good time. He's very charismatic. He jokes around a lot. And I think it just brings this certain charisma to this character that I really enjoyed. Next, I like the seemingly real-world aspects of the church that were present in the first two parts of the film. How the church sees exorcism and demonology as old hat and out of touch with concepts for the present day. And I like how Russell Crowe's character is the pillar of old ways and just wants to help people. But current leadership wants to phase him out because they think he's a troublemaker and damages the name of the church. I also like how the Pope is completely behind Amarth, upholding tradition and standing against evil. And I think that that's something that resonated with me, that they're just trying to do the right thing while everyone younger than them doesn't believe in what's going on, so therefore they don't get behind the right thing. I thought that concept was something good to be brought into a movie like this. And honestly, I like the small contained universe it was setting up with all the lore introduced in this film. It was very reminiscent of what I liked about the Conjuring universe and how they're setting up these demons and how they came to be and what the purpose is. But unfortunately, though, the film establishes all of this lore only for it to feel wasted at the end. It's cool, like the way that they set it up, but to have it end and lead the audience to believe that a possible series or something could come out of this, only for the film to end and pretty much give the outcome right there, that setup felt very out of place after that. And lastly, despite some of these really refreshing things and Russell Crowe's performance, the movie does get riddled with the cliche dialogue and the tropes that we horror fans have grown at when we see them. I feel like this movie could have been a genre breaker maybe, but sadly it wasn't. But nevertheless, I found it surprisingly entertaining and very engaging for a movie I had no desire to see. So yeah, The Pope's Exorcist is surprisingly good with its good characters, decent lore, and good performances by Russell Crowe, but it's just kept from being great by the usual overdone tropes of the exorcism subgenre. Still entertaining and engaging to watch, though. So The Pope's Exorcist gets a 3.5 out of 5, and it's Grizzly Grade guarantee. Now, On to the finale, the one we've been waiting on, Evil Dead Rise. Evil Dead Rise is the story of a single mom, her sister, and her three kids who are set upon by an ancient evil when a copy of the Necronomicon is unearthed by an earthquake. The book is opened, and a recording containing translations of the book is played, and once again the Deadites are unleashed upon our world, and their first vessel is Ellie. Now Beth and the kids, along with the residents of their floor, must fight to escape or be mutilated and turned into Deadites themselves. So from the time that this movie was announced, I have been patiently waiting. It got pushed a few times, then almost completely shelved after Discovery bought Warners, was sent to HBO Max, and then just like the title says, The Evil Dead Rise. And it rose from the ashes, and now here we are. But the question is, does it live up to the hype? And as an Evil Dead fan and a horror fan, I have to say, yes it does. And also, no it doesn't. So, to start off, Ellie might be the most terrifying and evil Deadite we have seen yet. Ellie is the Deadite that you see who is also the mother figure in the trailers. The one that's like, Mommy's with the maggots now. That one. That is Ellie. And she is played by Alyssa Sutherland. And she goes all in as Ellie. The stuff that she says and does once she is possessed by the Deadites is just, it's just ruthless. And she is relentless in her mental and physical assault of her sister, kids, and the rest of the floor of this apartment complex. Which brings me to the apartment complex as a setting. I didn't think initially that it was going to work that well, but it allowed for the crew to get some pretty cool shots that really feel super isolated and claustrophobic. Shots involving the peephole in the door especially, watching Ellie wreak havoc through the view of this peephole was awesome. And just like with most Evil Dead films, the gore is abundant and crazy. I did find it, to be a little toned down from the last one, but it is still good, wincing, and shocking. One time in particular, there was a victim that was killed by having his arms ripped off. She like grabbed his arms and kicked him in the chest and ripped both his arms off. And it's like a kid, and it is gnarly. And all that was viewed through this peephole. And it was just a really, really cool shot. You got the cheese grater scene that everybody sees on the trailer. It made everyone in the theater jump and gasp at that one. It was hilarious. I do think that there were some missed opportunities with the gore, though. One in particular is the scene from the trailer with the tattoo gun that's about to go into the kid's eye. That was a very, very tension-filled scene, but they didn't push the envelope. And it's probably because it's kids that are the majority of the victims in his movies. Which brings me to the kids. Cassie, the youngest kid, is great. She gives a great performance. I fully believe that she is this little girl trying to deal with the situation of her mom becoming this monster that's trying to kill her and her siblings. And as far as the rest of the kids and the aunt, even the aunt, I think her name was Liz, I found them to be very empty and not really interesting or reacting to the situation like normal people would, which also makes the choice of introducing a family into this universe seem questionable when the family isn't developed enough for anyone to really get attached to or care about at all. Now, another couple of concepts that I did like, and these were awesome, is the concept of more versions of the Necronomicon. And particularly, they actually called this one by a different name, and I didn't really catch the name, but that explains why the Necronomicon looks different than the one in the previous film that also resembles the ones from the old Sam Raimi Evil Dead films. So the fact that there's different copies or different volumes of this book, I found that to be great and very good, subtle way of expanding the universe. I also found it cool that they do different stuff, and probably the coolest thing, which was kind of a holdover from Fede Alvarez's Evil Dead, is this introduction of these new creatures that come from the Necronomicon itself that literally manifest during whatever situation is. Certain things happen throughout the time that the Deadites are wreaking havoc that seem to lead to these creatures manifesting. And this is slight spoilers, so if you don't want to hear this, then skip ahead a little bit. For 3, 2, 1. Okay. So this isn't really a huge spoiler, but it kind of is. The book has, as you've seen in most versions of the Evil Dead movies, that there are these horrific, grotesque scenes that are painted onto these pages or written on these pages or drawn on these pages. And like in the last movie, you had like the supreme evil or whatnot, and then the, I guess they called it the bride, whatever the copy of the final girl from the other Evil Dead, the last Evil Dead movie was, they kind of have a situation like this happen here where they don't really give a name, I don't believe, but there is this picture in the Necronomicon of a bunch of different Deadites that seem to be melted or molded together into this horrific mound of flesh that just gives you like these callbacks to the thing, this real body horror aspect. And that thing shows up and we see it kind of be created in the movie. And I thought that that was badass. I love the concept of them doing this, like creating these new versions of Deadites and expanding on their lore. They're just not these crazy zombies that rip their own arms off and spin their heads around and mutilate their bodies. They actually have, you know, a little bit more pizzazz to them, and I do like that. Hence one of the reasons why, even though Evil Dead is technically a possession and demonic possession movie, and in some ways an exorcism movie in the horror subgenre tree, I don't mind them because they have a little bit of uniqueness to them. And I really appreciated that the director, which I think his name was Lee Cronin, brought that in. I know that Raimi and Bruce Campbell were heavily involved in it. I'm sure they had an influence on this too. Lee Cronin, he actually directed Hole in the Ground. I don't know if y'all have ever seen that movie. Give it a check out. It's a very interesting horror film. It was very odd when they announced that he was going to be the director, but I think he did a pretty good job. Now, his style of directing and Fede Alvarez's style of directing from the last film are completely different. And at first, I felt like it was missing the Fede Alvarez treatment, that I felt like it needed to be more brutal and it needed to be more just high octane, just craziness going on. And the more I think about it, I think that this movie really did benefit from the more art house style of camera work and directing that we got with this film. I don't know if I agree with toning down the violence for an Evil Dead film, because now when I say toning down the violence, I'm not saying that this movie is not that violent at all. This movie's violent as shit. It's going to be violent. It's an Evil Dead movie, but it just wasn't as crazy violent like the 2013 Evil Dead. That movie, I don't look away from the screen in a lot of movies, and that movie made me look away from the screen a lot because the violence was so intense. But it was effective in what I call tasteful violence. The violence is driving the story forward. It's not just violence to have violence. And I do think that they toned this one down a little bit, and I think it kind of took me back a little bit, because I think they did it because of the kids, and I get it. You can't watch kids get brutally mutilated, but it might have brought the tension of the movie up just a little bit more. The only real complaints that I have about it is stuff I've mentioned before. The whole introducing the family thing, it just didn't feel right. It felt kind of out of place, and I didn't really care about any of the kids besides the youngest kid. And the aunt starts kind of coming into her own towards the end of the movie, which there's a whole other subplot with her that I didn't really care about, and I don't think a lot of people cared about. And I just wanted a little bit more from the characters, which the last Evil Dead's characters were like that too. Most of the characters in that movie are just fodder and there to get killed. But I want, if you're introducing a family, I want to like really feel for them when they're dying. And the only ones that I really felt compassion for, and the ones I really wanted them to get away and survive, was the youngest girl, Cassie. The other two siblings, I didn't like them. I thought they were empty characters that were, they attempted to try to make them not seem empty, but they were super shallow, and they were Gen Zers, man. And no offense, Gen Zers, but here lately, when there's a lot of Gen Zers, stereotypical Gen Zers portrayed in movies, they're not very good characters. These two were no exception. But nevertheless, I feel like that everyone that became a deadite in the movie did well, even if they were on a short, like a very short time period where they were a deadite. But again, Ellie steals the show. And the finale of the movie was pretty good. It's your typical Evil Dead finale. The final gripe that I have for the movie is there's an ending scene, and the beginning of the movie does not start out as the main plot of the movie. The beginning of the movie is essentially the end. It's one of those movies where at the end, it wraps back around. And we are introduced to this one girl that lives in the same apartment complex. And she in turn becomes infected, and it wraps around to the events of the very beginning of the movie. Which, I know I'm kind of going all over the place, but the beginning of this movie, when they have the title card, it's the most unique way I've seen them show a title card in a long time. I absolutely loved it. But back to what I was saying, the end wraps around back to the beginning. It's very unbelievable to me that even if there's dark energy and dark magic involved and demonic forces going on, it's very, very, very unlikely to me that no one else in this apartment complex heard all of the fucking carnage that was going on this one floor. There is legit a scene, and this isn't really a spoiler, a fucking elevator crashes all the way down at the bottom floor of this apartment complex. And you're going to tell me that nobody else heard this shit and no one came to investigate, that the deadites wouldn't be jumping to possess the entire apartment complex? Doesn't make any sense to me. The deadites don't just target one specific individual most of the time. They're like a disease. They're trying to spread their plague upon this world. So it just logically did not make sense that no one else in the apartment complex like heard this shit going down. So when the teenage girl, or the, you know, pre-college teenage girl is at the end of the movie, and she gets possessed, and it wraps around to what happened in the beginning of the movie, she's like, oh yeah, it was storming so bad last night, someone broke the elevator, I didn't even hear it. There's no fucking way. There's no way. So logically, it just doesn't make any sense. Now, if they explained why none of the other residents were there, I do know that the building was set to be demolished. And yet her, most of her floor was full of people. There's like maybe 10 or 12 people in this, on this floor. Or I could be fluffing those numbers. There's enough people to take up the floor. So it's not logical to me that no one else on the other floors heard anything, especially when the elevator pretty much, elevator shaft pretty much collapses. But you don't really come to an Evil Dead movie to be logical. The whole premise itself is not logical. It's illogical. So these are all minor gripes. Did I enjoy this movie? Absolutely. Do I think it's one of the best horror films I've seen this year? Absolutely. The problem is, and I expected it to raise, quote, rise the stakes, but it didn't. See what I did there? it didn't as much as I wanted it to. Were the performances good? Overall, yes, and Ellie steals the show, and that's all. Ellie is literally the only thing that matters. But it's one of those things where I expected it to surpass Fede Alvarez's. I expected him to push the envelope, because we are in a new age where you can push those boundaries, and I don't feel like it did. But I do think that Evil Dead Rise brings us the guts and gore that the franchise is known for, while also bringing us new lore and different takes on the Deadites. Alyssa Sutherland is the standout as Ellie, and Ellie might be the scariest and the most sadistic Deadite we've ever seen. I just wanted the other characters to be better, and I wanted the story to be as good as the directing and as good as the camera work. The camera work was phenomenal. It's still a great addition to the franchise and one of the best of the franchise. So Evil Dead Rise gets a 4.25 out of 5 and is Grizzly grade guaranteed. Go see it. It's one of the best horror films released this year so far. Go check it out. And with that, we bring another episode to an end. Thank you all so much for your continued support. Without y'all, the show isn't possible. If you like this episode, please consider subscribing to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget to click the links in the description below to follow me on all social media platforms. So with Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 on the horizon, probably time to crack open the Grizzly Guide and talk about a couple of characters. Probably Adam Warlock and the High Evolutionary. I'm going to give a little bit more in-depth about their origin in the comics. So stay tuned for that. That should be the next episode. And then the following episode should be the review for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Hope it's good. MCU's been real stale lately. I'm not a fan of the comedic MCU. Everybody that listens to this show knows that. But I do think it fits the Guardians. So I'm hoping that they don't go so silly in this last one that these really two awesome characters that they're introducing just go wasted. If y'all follow me on TikTok and social media, please stay tuned. I'm going to start bringing y'all extra content through those platforms, especially TikTok. So if you're listening and you don't follow me, what are you waiting for? You're part of the Mean Militia. You might as well join me on social media as well. Also want to give a shout out to Carl Casey at White Bat Audio. He's got, does all the music for the intro, outro, and background of these episodes. So go check his stuff out at Carl Casey at White Bat Audio on YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Music. Thank you all so much for sticking around after all my personal issues I had, which delayed almost everything. I hope you enjoyed this horror fatal four-way review, and look forward to seeing y'all in the next episode. So until then, remember, I'm Joe Grizzly, bitch.